One, go.
And we are live.
We sure are live. That was a long intro. I had to sing for like 20 seconds there.
It's a good intro. Good song.
Yep. Tired.
Yeah.
The soundtrack of your life right there. Welcome, yep. Everybody, to Live at the Hive, episode 176. I'm Dan Nedelko.
Matt Stefanich.
April McCall.
And today we will be talking about how you can leverage influencer marketing, regardless of the size of your business and or audience, create collabs and grow a community and develop long-term relationships in a, what is a somewhat new channel for especially brands and businesses. So hopefully we can help guide you through some of the landmines that do exist and how to build great relationships instead of subverting them.
For sure. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the amount of influencers now that are out there has increased because, you know, everyone's been at home for the past year creating content, right? They're on TikTok, they're on Twitter. So there's some great opportunities that people can start spearheading now. So some good stuff.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I think one of the things to preface before we look at a little bit about what's new is that fundamentally, everybody's an influencer, right? Because, and this was something we were talking about on our production meeting, but even 10 years ago, well, 10 years ago, it was very, very embryonic. It was very new, but 15 years ago, you know, prior to YouTube, these types, having the ability to broadcast, even doing what we're doing right now, was pretty much impossible. There was no major distribution channel that could compete with large broadcast. And today, it's a very different world where there's millions and millions of YouTube channels. You can start your own YouTube channel for free and boom, you are a broadcaster, right? And so that dynamic has changed how businesses need to figure out how to interact in this new world, as opposed to necessarily thinking of social media and video platforms as being broadcast channels where they're really not. And there's millions of media outlets if you think about it. So YouTube is not a media outlet. YouTube facilitates individual media outlets, for example. Right on. So why don't we start and just look at a few of the what's new things that we've got on the go?
Yeah. So for this week's what's new, we're going to be starting off with an article from Marketing Dive. It's titled Branded Content, Influencer Marketing Make Up Biggest Slice of Digital Ad Budgets. And it's no surprise, really, just because like we said in the beginning, there's you know, a lot more influencers out there. People are creating more content. Couple really high level insights that they give within the article. You know, marketers are putting 20% of their digital ad budget into branded content and influencer marketing, which is great. You know, about a third, so 23% or sorry, 32% of advertisers say they've boosted spend on branded content and 25% more on influencers during the second half of last year. So, I mean, a lot of people are starting to put a lot of, at least some money into a budget for influencers. And, you know, I think this is going to work for a lot of people, but at the same time, if this is your first time working with an influencer, you're definitely going to have some hurdles that you're going to have to get over to really create that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think every business needs to look at, I mean, there's various different levels. Like just as an example, Activision, Call of Duty, Warzone just had their nuke event the other day, in which they blew up the map and they created a new map, kind of like a Fortnite event. Now that's at a massive scale, but they literally had all of the top Twitch and YouTube streamers live streaming and doing reactions to it because they are a more effective outlet than any advertising that Activision could possibly do. And that these are the big budgets that you're seeing. On a microcosm scale, even if you're a small local business, you can find and identify ways to take some of your advertising budget and use it to work with collaborations with influencers that would be in your space and or in your area. And if you went down, if you went down a level, not that it's down that much, but if you look at influencers like in the home renovation and real estate space, Scott McGillivray, Brian Ballmer, so they would be mid-tier. And then you can keep going right on down. We're going to look at some of those in today's live too, but it certainly is worthwhile regardless of the size of your budget. And it's playing out that these are good ways. Now there's right ways and wrong ways to strike up these deals, right? And
absolutely. Absolutely, for sure. And like you said, we'll be getting into those as we get into what's working. And we have a lot to talk about in what's working this week, too. So some good stuff to look forward to. Next article, we're going to be talking about... Dan, you kind of put this one a little bit forward when we were planning them out for Daily Mail suing Google over search rankings. I know we've been covering this, I think, for a few weeks now. We've been kind of keeping up with, you know, people starting to get upset with Google over the search rankings.
Right.
But looks like Daily Mail at least had enough.
Yep.
Well, yeah. And it's, I mean, they had some, you know, interesting hot takes on their opening arguments about what this thing was all about. Mm-hmm. So the lawsuit alleges that the company punishes publishers in search rankings if they fail to sell enough advertising space. I think that is probably completely unfounded. It's the, if you scroll down,
yeah,
they're completely inaccurate. And I would actually tend to agree. I think there's a lot of other things you could go after Google about. That's not one of them.
That's going to be one that's hard to win, too. Definitely keep your eye on it. But I mean, yeah, like I agree. It's definitely difficult to make these claims for sure. I think in some aspects, I think you can improve the algorithm for sure. But I don't think that they're physically going in there and manipulating the searches.
No. Well, no. And you know, you could make the argument that Google's, because that was an organic algorithm update in which the Daily Mail saw a significant drop in their search rankings and their visibility. You could make the argument, if you've ever been to the Daily Mail's website, that Google was effective in improving the quality of news being promoted on the algorithm. Mm-hmm. The Daily Mail's website is pretty bad. In my opinion, from a usability perspective, content, you can debate that all day, but they're pretty much a tabloid.
Like clickbait stuff.
Mm-hmm. They have a ton of pop-ups, pop-unders, all sorts of stuff happening there. And Google has said that there's, you know, there are user experience and site speed and all sorts of other issues that go into that. So it's just a little bit of drama. We'll see where it goes, how much, you know, I mean, I don't know that
how
taking.
How are they going to get with Google? I don't know.
Yeah.
One's got a significantly deeper pockets than the other. So, you know.
Significantly. Yeah. I'd say so.
Is exactly. This just a shock and awe campaign to mm-hmm. you know? You know, if there were anything, obviously Google has a lot of monopoly and class action issues happening right now. That would probably be the wiser approach in terms of how you would approach
going after them.
Mm-hmm. I think Google has bigger fish to fry right now than that. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Well, I remember that day that algorithm change happened, and everyone's, everyone's, but we saw a lot of people lose.
Yep. And you know, there's a lot, if you're interested in algorithm updates and you're watching that, you can always watch Semrush's sensor tool, which looks at shakeups in rankings, mm-hmm. which indicate that there have been some algorithm updates. So let's move on to our next one.
I think that's that's what we only did two this week, because the branded content influencer one, that one ties really nicely into what's working. So we can kind of use bits of that article and feed it into our what's working for this week.
100%. Let's go.
Alrighty, so for this week, like we said, we're talking about creating influencer relationships and collaborations to grow in your communities. Throughout this What's Working segment, we'll be discussing, you know, a little bit more detail of what an influencer is and what they can be, using influencer marketing collaborations, why engagement is important than follower count, generating engagement, some tools you can use, how to nurture these relationships after you create them, and then just kind of reaching out on Facebook, Instagram, measuring your KPIs, all the kind of little stuff that comes with creating these really good relationships. So,
And there are nuances to how you deal with influencers versus dealing with, you know, ad networks, ad platforms, that kind of thing. And I think it's important to understand those nuances and how to really build a relationship, because if you approach it from a traditional standpoint, or if you approach it that, you know, an influencer is some kid living in their mom's basement. You can really burn some bridges with those people that have wield a ton of influence. I'll tell a very brief anecdote about, you know, the power of an influencer. And obviously Joe Rogan's an unfair, is an unfair example, but, one of the key things about influencers is that they have the ability, they've got a tribe and they've got people that follow them. And if they say you should go try something and check it out, they will literally say, okay, I'm going to go try it and check it out. Right. Because it's their tribe. So we were working years ago with a ketogenic supplement provider, and we were managing the store and saw Joe at joerogan.com place an order. So, you know, and it was a pretty substantial order. So I ended up just deciding to email saying, hey, you know, I'm sure this probably isn't Joe Rogan himself. It's probably someone on his team. Just wanted to say, hope you really, you know, thanks for placing the order. We'd love to talk to you about, you know, is there any way we could work together since you're already an existing customer? He actually replied within like an hour and said, no, it's Joe. That's awesome. It's actually me. He goes, I don't do brand placement deals. But I will talk about products that I actually like. And then within 2 weeks on one of the upcoming Joe Rogan podcasts, he actually talked about this product for about 2 or 3 minutes, said how great it is, how much he loves it. And we got about 400 or 500 orders within an hour.
That's insane.
And the price point was $199 US for a 30-day supply. So it's not an insignificant price point.
Right. 400 orders for that price point. It's still really, really impressive. Yeah.
It's good. So that's the power of what an influencer can do. And that's and that was, like I said, just a very casual mention in the middle of a podcast. So, you know, the influencers should really be taken seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the ways that we'll talk about on how to kind of build that relationship with an influencer, you know, even if it's not, you know, an official kind of like partnership, you can still have a dialogue with people and people can still communicate with you and share their ideas about your products. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like what Dan said, you know, they have a tribe behind them and, you know, they're willing to trust that brand, that person. Right. So it's worth trying out and talking to them, and they have more power, I think, than people actually think. So, which I think is the next segment to this slide, actually.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So yeah, the one important thing to remember with an influencer is, and regardless, you can see micro influencers right on up to Ryan's World and Toys with Ryan. Actually, we had this conversation yesterday in the production huddle that we had. I went to Shoppers to pick up the kids some new toothbrushes, and lo and behold, Ryan has like 3 toothbrushes in the Colgate section.
He's added more.
Good for him. Ryan's got a hustle going on.
Ryan, he's grabbing the bag. He's grabbing
number one influencer, 11-year-old.
Yep.
Ryan.
Goals.
Yeah.
That's for awesome. Sure. For those of you that may not be familiar, Ryan, I think his last name is Kaji, 11 years old, has been on YouTube for several years, he's the top earning YouTube earner in the world as of last year, and he drives obviously massive amounts of influence and has toy lines now and has branched out into all sorts of things. He's on Nickelodeon, he's got several TV shows, and his main YouTube channel. That we're going to the extreme here on the high end. You also have Mr. Beast, who is very famous in the world of YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though. Like, if you go do a straw poll, I think a significant number of people in the world would have no clue who Mr. Beast is. But in his realm, which is in the, I think he's got 20 million subs on a few channels, 10 and 20 million subs, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, big.
Yeah. But he wields massive influence to that audience. That's kind of the key here, right? Is that, you know,
his audience is really engaged. If he tells them to go check something out or to go support something, like, it's an army, basically. Like, they'll do it for him. And it's amazing some of the things that they've done, like Team Trees before, you know.
Yes.
Getting that kickstarted, it'd be so so difficult to kickstart that off if he didn't have the reach and the kind of, you know, the way that he brings these people together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good example. I think the 1 million trees, and then he challenged, Elon Musk to donate more trees than he did, and it got the whole buzz and everybody talking and donating under not only Mr. Beast's audience, but also Elon Musk too, right? So it's the power of their authority or influence they have.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Teen Trees is a great example, and we'll try not to go down this rabbit hole too much, but... And this is an important distinction for businesses and people that maybe are not so familiar with influencers and the power that they wield. You'll see major television shows, say, get, you know, 1 million viewers or 2 million or 3 million viewers. And those are considered, you know, great numbers for whatever primetime slot they're in. You got to remember that these videos on the regular are getting 10, 20, 30, right. 40, 50 million views,
right.
Which far eclipses traditional media, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where it would be broadcast wide, traditionally, your television ad, which I don't know why any businesses, to be quite honest, would be running television advertising in 2021 because, I mean, people are not consuming television the same way that they used to.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but just to circle back on Team Trees, and I can share my screen maybe.
Oh, I have it up here.
Oh, you got it up there? Okay.
Yep.
So Team Trees, this is a really great example of the power of collaboration. And we're going to bring it back down to a more kind of smaller business level that might be more relatable to you, but by showing the large examples, I think we're illustrating how powerful this stuff is. Mr. Beast did not do this on his own by any stretch of the imagination. It was his idea, and he started it, but he grabbed every other major influencer, hundreds of major influencers, right? And then Elon Musk got involved. Okay, it just went.
Yeah, it was fun.
So Toby Lutke, CEO of Spotify, Elon Musk, Mark Benioff, the CEO of Salesforce, the Plants vs. Zombies team.
That's really, the CEO Wojcicki, of YouTube,
Susan Wojcicki, the CEO of YouTube, Jack Dorsey, CEO of Square. So this is what collaborations do, right? And they're extremely powerful. So although you may not have heard of some of these people, that's okay because you're not their audience necessarily. Right. But the audience that they have is so much more invested in these creators. And you see that. I mean, April, you participate in cosplay and there are influencers in that world that I wouldn't know about.
Yeah, exactly. There's a whole community, and that whole community builds a connection with each other, which I think is like that tribe analogy that you used. It really is like a tribe behind promoting somebody or someone and wanting to be involved in that community, or even that person. You want to relate to that person, right? You feel like you're close to that influencer and you share the same, you know, type of, you feel like they're your friend almost even, right? So I think whenever they say something, that all of their audience wants to try the same thing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And the funny thing that we talk about a lot is, you know, building community and building brand equity and building loyalty. And that's what these influencers do on like, that's their core. That's what they do. Again, not to go too deep into YouTube, but you look at the Keemstar versus H3 Productions. It's like two tribes will battle, right?
They fight each other on Twitter all the time.
And although that's probably like, I mean, I pretty sure they don't like each other, but I also pretty sure they don't mind the drama because it works for them, right?
They do say that drama brings in the views, so they do encourage it.
It does, for sure. But the interesting thing about influencers, talking about it from a business perspective, is from a marketing perspective, this is what brands are trying to do all the time. They're trying to build this passionate community, and the influencers have been doing this by their very nature from pretty much since that all started. So as a business, collaborations and building relationships with influencers is one of the smartest 200 IQ moves that a business can do, Because if you look at brands that have gone deep with influencer relationships, G Fuel, the drink supplement company is one of them, has been an incredibly powerful way to promote their business as being part of that community instead of trying to build their own community over here. Right. It's participating versus trying to drive it.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, because I feel like a lot of businesses feel like they have to drive it a lot of the times, and it's difficult to do. And especially if you don't have the influence and the experience. So when you join these communities rather than drive them, you can be a little bit more, you know, it feels a little bit more authentic when people see you interacting. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The influencers, their followers, they feel like they know these influencers, right? So their followers feel like they're friends with somebody they've never met. So the trust factor there is huge.
Yeah. And let's call a spade a spade. You know, people and businesses try to measure brand loyalty and brand equity. Mm-hmm. I think the reality is that very few people have an immense love for incorporated entities.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's not a thing that people are loyal to. They may they may really like Yeezys, right? But there will be another Yeezy. Some people may love Nike and be loyal to that. Okay, I get it. There's some great brands with brand equity out there. But by and large, consumers are fickle. They will change brands. They will change and try different things. And, you know, there is brand equity. I'm not saying it isn't there, but in this modern world, it's much more common that people are part of these influencer tribes as opposed to necessarily just wanting to represent businesses.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Absolutely. And we have a couple cases here that we can start kind of diving into that showcase this relationship and how people kind of use these companies and influencers to join these communities. And I think the first one we have here is the Sorry Girls, the DIY sustainability and design team.
Yeah, and they've been around for a very long time. You know, and it's also another interesting thing. A lot of these influencers with substantial numbers have been around for 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. There are some new up-and-comers, Graham Stephan in the finance space, for example. You know, this kid, Graham Stephan, he had Kevin O'Leary come on his show several times, and he's only a few years in, but he's got about 7 or 8 million subscribers on YouTube, so he's really figured it out. A lot of these influencers have been doing this for a very long time, and for example, like the Sorry Girls, I would look at them as being very much a media company and a very savvy media company. And they've got this great tribe. We have worked with them in the past. And you know, they've got a really great YouTube channel, Matt. I don't know if you can pull up the Sorry Girls YouTube channel.
Yep, I can bring that up for us, no problem.
Yeah, they're great at talking to their audience, and they know exactly who they're talking to, and they have a good atmosphere and feel, which we'll probably see in a second.
Yeah. But
I really like them. They're great.
Yeah. And they've got a very powerful community that's highly engaged. Yeah. You know.
Great YouTube channel here.
Yep.
Yeah. So if we go into some of the videos, some of the recent videos that they've done.
Yeah, I know they post quite frequently as well. So they're always engaging with their audience, doing something.
Yep. And they've got a very active Instagram as well. So these are the kinds, like, identifying an influencer like this. And they're also in Canada. So I'm like 90% sure they're in Canada.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. They are.
And you can see that they also have their personal Instas up there, their personal Twitters, their Facebooks. So when you're looking for different types of influencers to work with, there's a really great, you know, you can, we're going to talk about some tools that you can use. We're going to talk about some different techniques, but fundamentally you can go search the platforms and find businesses that are in your range to work with. And we're going to talk about some techniques and how to approach it and things you should do and maybe shouldn't do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we can skip over one of these slides that kind of just talks about what the Sorry Girls do with their custom furniture. Now we can kind of talk about why this engagement is
really important. Do you want to talk about that quickly? Circle about this. What this is this is a mini case study that the team put together to say, hey, so we're a small business and we're looking to reach out to an influencer, and we found the Sorry Girls.
Yeah. Right. So the next step.
It is. Yeah.
So the next step in there would be kind of discussing why this engagement is important versus follower count too. Because I think that, you know, when people are starting to build up these relationships, people pay way too much more attention to follower count than the actual engagements that people are getting on on their content.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, this is...
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Sorry. This is red flag number one. If you have a high follower to low engagement rate, you know, there are certain influencers that have botted, that have used platforms in the past. And it really is. Don't look at the vanity metrics when you're looking at it. There are some small accounts, and we've got a couple of examples of very much smaller accounts. Some actually have a disproportionate amount of engagement versus followers. And what that really means is, and this is really becoming a thing on a lot of these platforms, is the platforms don't want people to be focused on follower counts. They want them to be focused on engagement. So quite often what you'll see is posts that can have a very high engagement rate. Like on YouTube, for example, it's not uncommon that 80 to 90% of any view comes from people that are not subscribed to the channel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Same thing on Instagram and same thing on Facebook. Absolutely on TikTok, right? Because you'll see engagements in the millions on a viral post and the person has 10,000 actual followers.
Yeah, it's the norm, right? True. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Here's this comment from Stacy. The Sorry Girls does a great job of not overly producing their work and making sure they respond to almost all of their community comments. Yes. Excellent point is they're not trying to be an HGTV show. They're infusing a lot of their personality in there.
Building that community still, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Pippa also says that there's a lot of fake follower bots out there, so it's not an accurate metric to use when measuring reach. And that's a really important point, too.
Absolutely. So it's all about quality and engagement. And don't dismiss a profile. Like, and again, you know, we can pull this back to a more local level. Like we've talked about the macro and Team Trees and Mr. Beast and, you know, all these big influencers, but you can have, if you're a local business, you will have local influencers within your community, and they may have 700-800 followers, but who are those followers? Are they influential in your space or in your geography? Right. The other thing that's really important to remember is that influencers that are smaller are far more passionate and far more eager to be creative and work with you.
Yeah.
That's for sure. They want to keep building themselves and engaging with their community, right?
Yep. And, you know, their communities are smaller too, and they're a little bit more personal. So chances are, if you have a smaller community, the audience is interacting with the content creator or the influencer 10 times what they would be if it was, then it would be someone with 2 million or like a million followers or something, right? It's a lot more personal.
Well, anybody that's got 2 million followers on YouTube or whatever platform it is, at one point they had one follower, they had 10 followers, right? That's how the good ones have built themselves. Yep.
Yep.
And then, what I was going to say is what you need to do is look at your business and look at the type of customer that you've got. Find your ideal customer and then find those influencers that meet those criteria, and don't try to punch up weight classes, right? Don't approach Kylie Jenner and expect to be shocked when it's $250,000.
Start where you can aim, so to speak.
For sure. Alrighty. Next, I guess we can talk about, you know, generating engagement beyond the follower count. So we can start talking about, you know, the quality of your followers, right? And you need to consider who these people are, where they consume their content, but also understanding that, you know, the reach of your audience is more important than, you know, how many people you have following you. It far extends beyond that, especially if you're creating your content properly.
Yeah, for sure. So this is a DJ at a retirement home. That's a fascinating enough.
It's funny. I know. I saw that one. Yeah.
Well done. I think the point here is that if you had 1,000 people and you're a DJ at a party and only 2 people were on the dance floor dancing, you're not really reaching. You'd rather have 50 people and all of them are fully engaged.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. And I think that this is something that a lot of businesses and a lot of brands really need to understand and appreciate. Mm-hmm. I think rationally everybody knows it, but you look at those total numbers. And again, this is why all of the the social media platforms are really trying to move away from total followers as being anything other than a vanity metric.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. And TikTok's doing that more than any of them, really, I think, for sure.
It's definitely engagement numbers and the views are more important than the followers, I think, on TikTok.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Alrighty, so now we can talk about, you know, the actual content in the posts and kind of seeing if the post is even going to be generating some engagement for you and if people are responding to it, right? So we do have an example here on the right-hand side. It's a video from the Sorry Girls on their Instagram, and it's talking about, you know, just kind of how to use a drill and driver, really basic content. But you can see here, it has 24,000 views, has tons of engagement on it. And it's showing us the type of content. Yeah, it's only a minute long. And it's just showing people, you know, relevant content and providing things that their audiences are going to like and utilize. It's not about them, right? It's them showing their audience how to do something. And that's value that audiences recognize.
Yeah, sometimes they'll highlight certain tools, like certain tool brands even, or brands that they really like to use in some of these videos. And even in that 1 minute, you have a bunch of people asking about what brand of, let's say, tool they're using in that in the comments section, right? So it's generating conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the other thing to remember is that although, you know, what how to use a drill may seem obvious to a certain group of people, there's a lot of people out there that have no clue how to use a drill. And so doing the basic stuff with your community and not making people feel stupid about something is a really important aspect in this. There's another YouTuber that blew up recently. And the name of the channel is Dad, How Do I? And basically it's a really, it's kind of a heartwarming channel. The guy's a pretty innocent, nice guy. And basically what he did was he started a YouTube channel, for to answer basic questions and basically being an internet dad, a YouTube dad. So he would talk about things like how to remain positive and how to deal with adversity and how to unclog a toilet and how to change the oil in your car, like the basics of being a dad. And he exploded. He's in the millions of followers now. And his videos are very simple. They were originally shot with only an iPhone. Nothing fancy at all. He had a series on dad jokes, and consistently in his comments, you know, we must protect our internet dad. And you hear all these great stories, right?
And I think he originally did it for, I think his kid had gone to college or something, and he made a little series and on how to's while they were gone. So, and then people really resonated with that and said something that they've always wanted. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. This is just a quick little snippet on, you know, some best times to post. And these really depend on, you know, what social circle you're in. But generally, we can see here that with, I'm not sure which account. This might have been from the Honeypot account.
This is the Honeypot account, And I think the one important thing to remember on this, sorry to jump in there, Matt, is that you see all these posts on the internet for digital marketing, like what's the best time to post? Well, the answer is it depends, right? If you're a video game content creator or you're a hardware store, I think your times to post will be drastically different.
Your audiences are way different.
Instead of the 12 o'clock noon time, you might see more 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock kind of rollout, right?
Yeah, and that's a good point, because so we're talking about digital marketing for business. So we're getting more engagement from people that are actively engaging. Maybe they're pretending to work. Who knows what they're doing? but this is our Instagram. But you know, and it's fine, because like in the evenings, you know, we're not getting a ton of engagement, and that's fine. That's fine. I mean, we could look at, from a strategic perspective, we could look at things we could post off of hours to maybe drive some of that additional engagement. But, you know, what you want to do is kind of moderate a pattern against, you know, and this, I think, is going back a year. So it's good generalized. There's enough data there to say, And this is when you're working with an influencer, is to let them know that, like, this is when my audience is most engaged, and they may tell you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Alrighty, tools. Now we're going to be talking about some tools that we can use to find our influencers. Now, a lot of people like using social platforms, and honestly, using the social platforms is a great start, and you can actually find some really good influencers. But these tools just kind of make it a little bit more simple, and you can also go a little bit more further with, like, really specifically targeting your niche or the industry.
And analytics and such, you can see those with these tools. They'll be able to kind of pull all the influencers, almost like what their best time, what, how many viewers they have, how many followers, how many engagements they get, and, you know, maybe what the cost is even. So it does all the research for you, which is nice.
Yeah, I think you were doing some hype auditor work this week, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I was using it. It's a great tool. It pretty much does a lot of the research for you. And as Matt said, it's highly targeted. So, example, if I'm looking for an influencer like the Sorry Girls, I can look for people in that type of community really easily with these tools, which is nice.
Yeah, and they give, you know, congregated data too. So as you can see here on the slide, if you can read it, kind of gives you a quality audience, which would be, you know, their main number. And then it gives you, like, the authentic engagement, right? So realistically, how much of this engagement is really authentic for them? So then you can start, you know, filtering out the bots. You can start filtering out kind of the spam and stuff, right?
Yeah, and what platforms they're on too. So if there's a specific platform that you only really want to focus on, or which influencers on what platform, it does all that research for you as well.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is that each one of these platforms is meant, and this is part of the how the influencer marketing world is maturing. If you jump back one slide there, Matt, there's actually the Brands Collab Manager and Facebook for Media, and these two tools have been around for about 4 years, I think. And one of the important things to remember is that you can, with the Brands Collab Manager, for example, if you strike a brand deal with an influencer, that media, the posts that they've produced, can be shared with you, so you see the actual metrics and not just a screenshotted report. And you want to understand, like, working with the influencer, you want to understand what performance looks like and what does it mean? Like, what are your goals? Every influencer relationship will have a slightly different spin to it. So there are some built-in tools that you don't have to pay for, and some of these tools can be pricey. Hype Auditor certainly is not necessarily cheap, so it may not be within. Upfluence is what I would call it seems to focus a little bit more on medium-sized creators and international creators, so that's a good one. And BuzzSumo also comes with a price tag too. But again, you know, beyond all of the tools that you've got and the benefits that they have, you don't fundamentally need them if you're looking around.
Yeah, and especially if you follow a lot of content creators within the space, you might know a few people off the top of your head that you can go straight into, right? I think these tools are more so for when you're either doing it on a bit of a larger scale, or you've had a little bit more experience with an influencer content, finding influencers to create relationships with.
Yeah, I think Influencer Co. there's a free version of their that as well. So it's a good place to start. So it gives you a good starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one kind of just shows you kind of the metrics that you get with some of these platforms here. And then here we can kind of see, this one's Facebook's Brand Collabs Manager, which is a little bit of a different tool where you can go in and kind of find the right people and talents based on their Facebook data.
Yeah, for sure. I think what we can do is we can jump past. I mean, there's a bunch of tools here. I think we've got links to most of them there.
Yep.
Since we're running out of time here, I think there's just a couple of things we can do to nurture relationships and give you a couple of ideas here in terms of the best way to deal with it. Don't go to any influencer without understanding and respecting the fact that they are a company and their time is worth money. This is the single biggest mistake that brands will make, is like, hey, we'll send you our product. Well, I can tell you one thing is that if that influencer immediately says okay, they probably don't have the influence that you're looking for.
Yeah.
right?
They know something you don't. Yeah.
Well, and treat your influencers. And I think this is the philosophical mind shift is treat your influencers. They are media companies. Like the Sorry Girls will have a, yeah, they're a business. They've got a staff, they've got overhead, right? They work hard. And so work out with them what the financial compensation looks like, whether it's cash and or percentage. The second side of that as well is influencers are motivated by having creative control. And I can guarantee you one thing. They will know how to create better content for their audience than you ever would know.
Yeah. Don't give them a script. They'll know how to kind of.
Yeah. I mean, if you send them a bunch of stuff, they're going to, they'll tell you straight up if it's going to work or if it's not. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Well, and what you don't want to have is, and you see this all the time, you know, I think a true influencer collaboration allows to make sure one, they know and like your product and they actually believe in it. You will see Raid Shadow Legends. You'll see a number of the usual suspects. Now, I would argue that actually Raid Shadow Legends has probably been pretty effective. It's a bit of a carpet bomb campaign that they run. But the joke of Raid Shadow Legends is that even the YouTubers that are doing it are kind of rolling their eyes when they're reading the script, right? Yeah, and you know that they don't really play this game.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of having a, you know, an infomercial in the middle of a video, which is basically just a commercial, is let them create content that actually weaves your product into the stories that they're telling and the things that they're doing, right?
Yeah.
That's a really important part. And look, at the end of the day, I think it's a benefit for a business to have an experienced content creator and influencer creating content and using their brain power and experience.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what they bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And they know how to talk to their audience better than you would, right?
Mm-hmm. So
absolutely, for sure.
And one other tip here, in terms of this, when you do work with an influencer and you know, try not to just do a post, try to do a series of posts, work out something long term so that, and then when the content is being created, and you know, you kind of want to talk to them strategically with the influencer. It's really effective if you as a brand are able to go in there and participate in the conversations that happen and be there and be active, like in the comment section, answering questions. Like you work this out with the influencer beforehand because that is their, you know, their
sort of domain,
property. Exactly. But every time we've worked with influencers effectively, they've been absolutely cool with it.
Oh yeah.
Right. And it develops a much more personal relationship with the influencer. And instead of the influencer just looking at it like, oh, I'm doing a brand deal. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, no, I've got a relationship with this brand, right? They're part of my community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, sure. It's a two-way street almost collaboration. Yep.
We've talked about this a bit, the levels of influencers, like small influencers, medium influencers, and large influencers.
Yeah.
I don't think we have to dive into that too much.
No, and I think just the one thing is that if it's a smaller influencer, say 15,000 subs on Instagram and less, for example, just jump in their DMs, see if the, you know, and start chatting with them, talk to them on a personal level, let them know more about you and what you're looking to achieve and ask them questions.
Maybe share their content and like some of their posts and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you can participate in their community. At a medium level, they may have a Gmail account that you can reach out to as well. Always personalize it. Don't just be generic. And then at the larger level, you're going to be talking to a management agency and negotiating with them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Talked about this for a bit. So yeah, this is just kind of like a quick example of the DM that you would send out. You could kind of do it a little bit more detailed, but you definitely want to be personal. You 100% want to be authentic and you don't want it to just be like a script that you slap in there and hope that they answer.
Yeah, definitely don't use a canned script and definitely be sure that, you know, show some interest and definitely be personal because templates, I mean, I get dozens of these things a day for collaborations on our blog posts.
Yep.
And you know that it's just coming from a platform, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This one, just kind of reaching out on Facebook. We discussed that a bit, making sure that you give them a quick follow, sending them a message after you follow too. If you get a follow back from an influencer too, after you've followed them, I would like message them right away and just hop on that, because you know that they're active on the platform, mm-hmm. and chances are they're going through your profile as you look at theirs, right?
They'll definitely be researching you as well. Also, on each of the platforms that you're going to be using, you want to define your KPIs using the measurement tools for that platform, and really understanding that each one of these platforms is different, right? Uh-huh. And you may have different goals on each platform. We don't have time to dig in, but you know, we have access to the presentation. I think there's another slide here for TikTok as well.
And
you can see that each one of these, you know, they look similar, but they're in a nuance. They're all very different.
Exactly.
Sure. Cool. Yes. And understanding your goals. I think obviously the number one that every business will say is it's got to drive sales. But I also think it's if you're thinking the long-term play rather than the short-term, you know, short-term plays are sales. That's where you get a room full of people that are calling on the phone and pounding away. The long-term goal is community brand building engagement, right?
Right.
And I would suggest having a healthy blend of those two, not trying to treat a influencer relationship straight up as a sales.
Yeah. Not every campaign has to be a sales campaign.
Yeah.
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 And this is just kind of concluding everything, you know, make sure that you're working with like-minded people, you know, offer bundles too. That's something that we always discuss on Live at the Hive is, you know, offering bundles instead of a single product.
Yep.
Engage with local community, and then go ahead, Dan.
I was gonna say, you could also consider other businesses that are in your space as being influencers as well, and teaming up, right?
Yeah,
it's a powerful approach to take, the three or four businesses, especially during like tough times for a lot of businesses, get together, put together a bundle. Use all four of your audiences together to combine the power of those audiences into one larger audience, kind of like Voltron. Voltron, you know.
I do.
Yeah. These groups are more powerful together. So don't just think that, you know, you can do this with local businesses as well. And it would be a really powerful cross-selling opportunity for everybody involved. So.
Oh, absolutely.
So we have gone a little bit over time.
Just a little bit.
We had a little bit of a late start, so we're okay.
There you go. All right. Well, it looks like spring is approaching in southwestern Ontario. Looks like we finally broke the cold snap had this week. No more snow.
See couple temperatures in the high 20s next week. So
yeah, even the high teens is fine. I was still laughing because every year it's the same thing. The last week of April. And everybody does the same thing, and like it's a big shock and it's a big surprise, but like it happens every year.
Yeah,
so it's amusing to watch social.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks for joining us for episode 176 of Live at the Hive, digital marketing from the trenches. And you have a safe and relaxing weekend. Unplug. Rewind. Do whatever you gotta do.
Yeah.
Yourself away from that little evil mobile device that you carry around with you
for a little break. Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much. And we'll see you next week. Same B time, same B channel.
See you, everyone.